I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Oh, Liz, did you see the Ojai Valley Inn has a special in December?
No, we have to go.
Girls' weekend.
Okay, I'm splurging for a fireplace Shangri-La room.
Me too.
Hi, and welcome to Happier in Hollywood, the podcast about how to be happier, healthier, saner, more creative, more successful, and more productive in a backbiting, superficial, chaotic, unpredictable, fundamentally insane world. I'm Liz Kraft, a TV writer and producer living in LA, and with me is my high school friend and writing partner of 18 years, Sarah.
That's me, Sarah Fain. On this podcast, we talk about being writers in Hollywood, how we balance a career and friendship, and how to survive the war of attrition that is life in Los Angeles.
In this episode, we'll talk about whether it's helpful to have a professional nemesis, or two,
or 20.
We'll also discuss Sarah's recent obligation vacation and why we need to give ourselves permission to take a break from the things we have to do, but that don't really bring us any joy.
And then we have a Hollywood hack straight from my kitchen counter and also from Oprah's favorite things list. Mm. And finally, a listener question, but it's a question from me for our listeners.
Mm. But first, we wanted to mention to everyone, we talked about this last week, we wanted to bring it up again, that there is a very cool fundraiser event that's happening in LA on September 22nd. It's for the Refugee and Immigrant Center for Education and Legal Services, and it's going to be a live reading of The Goonies, starring all kinds of amazing women, including Gina Rodriguez, Nicole Byer, Eliza Coop, and Brittany Snow, to name a few of the folks involved. And every single dollar raised goes to the Refugee and Immigrant Center for Education and Legal Services. It's going to be an incredibly fun night and very inspiring, I'm sure.
Yes. So if you're in LA, check out the project's Twitter, at The Goonies Live, and the Facebook and Instagram handles are at The Goonies Live 2018. The show's going to be at the Montalban Theater in Hollywood again on Saturday, September 22nd. Very cool.
Excellent cause. Okay, Sarah, it's time for From the Treadmill Desks Of, in which we discuss what's most pressing in our work psyches. And today it's having a nemesis.
Yeah, I was reading this article about Roxane Gay and her various nemeses and kind of nemesis Twitter. The article was on Huffington Post. It's called Welcome to Nemesis Twitter, where phantom beefs run wild and free. If you don't know Roxane Gay, she's a writer, professor, editor, commentator. She's the author of the New York Times bestselling essay collection Bad Feminist, the short story collection Difficult Women, and the memoir Hunger, which is currently sitting on my bedside table, though I have not read it yet. And Roxane Gay is apparently well known for having several nemeses, and she tweets about them. Some of her nemesis tweets are, hate my primary nemesis extra today. And my nemesis, the one I tweet about, is not a writer. You will never guess. It's literally the stupidest nemesis I could possibly have for the silliest girl reason, but I devote myself passionately to the rivalry nonetheless.
And she says, my assistant has a nemesis, and now when I see her nemesis tweet, I narrow my eyes and feel a bit of anger.
So I just get a kick out of the whole notion of a nemesis and nemesis tweeting.
Mm-hmm.
We don't nemesis tweet, but we might have to start because it does seem kind of fun. But we should start by talking about how, like, a nemesis is not an enemy or even a frenemy.
Right. Like, an enemy is more serious.
Yeah.
It's like someone's really done you wrong and you really might wish them ill.
Yes, exactly. And but a frenemy. How
a
do
frenemy
we...
is a friend who's also an enemy, obviously. But I think they're more in your inner circle.
Right.
Whereas a nemesis is, I think, more of an outer. You go outside your circle for your nemesis.
Right.
But the idea of a nemesis, there's a certain lightheartedness to
right.
the notion. Like, There's kind of a whimsy to it, a dark whimsy, but a whimsy.
Exactly. Now, Liz, we have a nemesis, I would say.
Now, do we think we have the same nemesis? Should we?
Yeah, let's write down.
Who I'm thinking of.
Okay, we're going to type it like in our phones.
Okay, and then show it to each other.
Yeah. Okay, right now I'm bringing up my little notes app because we're not going to say it out loud, obviously.
I'm just writing it in an email and I'm going to show you.
Okay. I'm spelling it wrong because I can't. It autocorrects, but okay, here you go.
Oh.
We put different people.
We did, but I agree that's a nemesis.
And I 100% agree with you also.
I should mention they're both men.
Yeah. Interesting. We have nemeses.
Nemeses.
Plural. Oh, both well-deserved nemeses,
yes.
By the way. Yeah. I posed this question on Facebook, and several people sort of thought of nemeses in the framework of women kind of working against women.
Oh, interesting.
But just given what we just did on our phones, clearly that's...
Not
it's not gendered,
case.
Yeah.
Now, what do we get from our, I will say, nemeses, now that we know it's more than one?
For me, I'm not competitive in general.
Mm.
Like, I'm someone who didn't do team sports because I would always be like, you know, in a soccer game, like, no, you take the ball.
Right.
So it does provide for me... It kind of goads me to be competitive in a good way that's not natural for me.
It does that for me, too. I think I am competitive, like, in the career, not in sports. but it definitely lights my fire to think I want these nemeses. I don't want them getting ahead of us.
Yes. One of them is. The other one, I don't think so much. But regardless, we got to catch up and beat him at his own game.
Now, in a perfect world, and I think this is certainly true for our nemeses, they don't even know that they're your nemesis.
Definitely
it's just
true.
In your mind.
Yeah.
It's not like these are people that we actually have issues with.
Not at all. No, these are people, if we saw them at a party, we would chat.
Yes.
They don't know we're like, you know, boiling inside thinking we need to beat them.
In some ways, a nemesis is like an aspirational. It's like they are something, have something, embody something, symbolize something that you want.
Yeah.
In this case, that we want. So it's really our own kind of petty jealousy,
yes,
that makes these people our nemeses.
Yeah.
One
thing that's nice, I think, as a team,
mm-hmm,
is that having a nemesis gives us a common enemy.
Ah, we can bond over that.
Yes.
Rather than fighting with each other, we can target our frustration at our common nemesis.
At Mr. X.
Yes. That's funny.
Now, on the downside, it is a negative focus rather than a positive focus,
right,
sometimes. I mean, if it's just, I want to be as great as that person is. But often nemeses are people who really kind of bug you.
Right.
And their success kind of bugs you. So it's like, I wouldn't tell Violet to feel the way about people that we feel about our nemeses, you know, like it's not fundamentally healthy to compare yourself to someone else.
You know, to that point, Sarah, I was thinking we should do another episode that's sort of the opposite. It's about, I don't know if I would say a professional crush, like not a romantic crush, but talk about people that we emulate, admire, and who we, you know, sort of in the non-nemesis way, aspire to be.
We should. Although, for me, that was sort of last week when we talked to Channing.
True.
I think Channing is my professional crush.
Yes. Well, I have another one in mind.
Oh, good.
As
okay,
well,
excellent,
that we can talk about in a
excellent
future episode. Now, do you think that we're anybody's nemesis, or I guess nemeses, since we're two people?
Is it weird that I want to say I hope so?
I would love to be.
It's kind of flattering.
It's very flattering. I would be so upset if nobody saw us as a nemesis.
I know. If there's anyone out there who sees us as their nemesis, will you please let us know? You can do it anonymously.
Yes. I would feel like we had made it if people saw us as their nemesis.
Totally.
Or, by the way, their you know, mentor or something like that as well.
That would be great,
too. But it would be fun to have someone regard us with jealousy and
lighthearted jealousy.
Lighthearted, yeah. Now, you asked our Facebook group if people have nemeses and to tell us about it, and we got some great responses.
We did. Sarah in the Facebook group wrote, I use her as motivation to work harder / be better and not let opportunities go to waste. I'm not working to undercut her or wish her ill will, but I get a little jealous when she has an opportunity I want and legitimately could have had. We have similar careers and creative outlets. It's not like I'm a writer and she's a pro scuba diver and I'm mad she plays with giant squids. Since I use it for self-improvement, I think it's good to have her. If I found myself actively working against her or wasting time focusing on her versus my own self-improvement, that would be negative.
Someone else in our Facebook group wrote, when I first saw your post and thought of Roxane Gay, my brain went in two directions. First, a terrible female boss I had years ago. Thinking about her behavior toward me and others who came after me still ticks me off. Though her behavior did propel me into work that I love far more. Second, I thought about a couple of women writers I harbor terrible envy toward professionally, not personally. They serve the purpose of reminding me that my biggest nemesis is me. That's the insight of the show.
Yeah.
My envy toward these other writers has everything to do with the fact that they are putting their stuff out there all the time, which is exactly what I need to be doing. Well, it's really true that your nemesis points out to you what you should be doing because they're doing something you're not doing.
Yes. Obviously, when you look at them, you're seeing kind of the shortcomings
of yourself.
And
then you can act on them.
Yeah.
As we talk about on Happier, when you know yourself better, you can, you know, do what you should be doing. And our nemeses do help us know ourselves better.
Yes, they certainly do. I can think of something one of our nemeses did in, how can I discuss this in a way that is oblique enough? So this nemesis does something to promote a show that they're involved with that we just don't do, that we haven't even thought of doing.
Yes.
And it was a revelation.
Yes. So there, I mean, right there, our nemesis is providing us with something to aspire to
yes.
do what he does. To promote.
Yes, we're going to have to do that now.
Oh, damn. Do you have a nemesis? How does having a nemesis serve you or not serve you? Let us know. Send us an email or a voice memo to happierinhollywood@gmail.com. Next up, we'll discuss obligation vacations, but first an ad break. There are some stories about my mom's life that I truly never get tired of hearing. For instance, her first job was as a movie usher, and she would walk around with a flashlight and tell people to get their feet off the seat, and I just love hearing about it. Well, just in time for Mother's Day, I found the perfect gift that captures all her stories for my family forever. It's called Storyworth. Storyworth helps you preserve precious memories and stories from your mother or your mom figure's life for years to come. And at the end, you get it all put together in a book. And I know I will be so happy to have that book on the shelf and be able to open it anytime I want and read a wonderful story about my mom.
Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years. Storyworth. Right now, you'll save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/Hollywood. That's storyworth.com/Hollywood to save $10 on your first purchase.
Okay, now it's time for Take a Hike, in which we talk about mental, physical, or spiritual health. And today it's mental. Take an obligation vacation.
Sarah, I love the phrase obligation vacation. How did you come up with this?
Well, I'm afraid I'm going to take a little heat for my personal obligation vacation, but I'll just set the stage. You know, my mom has Alzheimer's. She lives in an assisted living facility near my house, and she has for more than 4 years. So every weekend for 4 years, Violet and I go to visit her, and it's very hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, I think, especially with a small child. Violet was almost 2 when we started doing this, and she's 6 now. It's just really difficult to kind of go in that environment with a small child who needs to be entertained,
yeah.
And my mom's sort of capabilities have changed radically over time. So it's like I can't kind of set up a system and then stick with the system. It's
right.
just like it's just a very challenging thing. So a few weeks ago, I took an obligation vacation.
Mm.
I said, you know what? This is something I've been doing for a really long time. I need a break.
Mm.
I need a break from this. And so for two weekends, I didn't go. They were insanely busy weekends, and I just couldn't figure out how to make it happen. So I just gave myself permission to take an obligation vacation.
And my question is, did you manage to do that without guilt? Because I think a key to an obligation vacation is that you not feel guilt, because it kind of ruins it if you do.
For the most part, I did. It helped that one of the weekends was my birthday.
Mm, yes.
So I felt like, all right, this is something I can do for myself
yes.
on my birthday.
Yeah.
And the next weekend was just like crazy, crazy busy. So I felt like this, you know, this, I could have been out of town, first of all.
Right.
Like, we haven't taken summer vacations because we're working so
yeah.
much. So I sort of decided to treat it as, well, if this were a normal year, I'd be out of town right now.
Right. And I just want to say for the record, I don't think anyone's going to give you heat for this. I think everybody understands it's really a difficult thing that you have to deal with week in and week out. And sometimes you need a break from it. I don't think anybody is going to question that.
Well, thank you. I think it's, you know, it's no fun to think of your mother as an obligation.
Right.
But that's kind of where we are at
yeah.
this, you know, at this stage of her disease. So it really did, though, help me sort of just mentally
let go.
Yeah. Like it was such a relief for two weekends to not have to think about it.
What's interesting about this to me, Sarah, because I was thinking, well, have I taken obligation vacation? You know, what are my
yeah.
obligations? I was thinking that the only time I really take an obligation vacation is when I'm replacing an obligation with another obligation.
Oh.
So, for instance, just this week, we had back to school night at school, which is an obligation. I mean, I feel an obligation to go to everything I absolutely can at Jack's school. That's
yeah.
an obligation I love. I mean,
right.
I want to be doing that. But nonetheless, it's an obligation.
Yeah.
Most obligations are things we want to be doing.
Yeah.
But like, we had to work late. I anticipated we were going to have to work late. And I just said to myself, you know what? For this one back to school night, I am just going to say, I don't have to be there.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't have to be there. And I'm going to just work, and I'm not going to be tortured and like all day be going, are we going to get out on time? Are we not going to get out on time? At what point can I still go to the back to school night, but it's not
yeah.
too late to where it's silly to even show up? I just said, if I can't go, I can't go. And I'm not even going to think about it. And I didn't end up going because we ended up working till 9:30. But it wasn't like an obligation vacation because I was just like getting a massage.
Right.
It's like if I'm doing something else that's an obligation, I let myself do it. If you see what I'm saying.
I do. But the really key part is that you decided, you made a clear decision
yes.
not to feel bad about
yes,
it.
Yes, I did. And I really didn't feel bad about it because it goes also, I will say, veering slightly off topic to the season of sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, this is our season of sacrifice, as we've discussed on the show.
Yeah.
And certain things have to go.
Right.
And this week it was back to school night.
Yes. Although I do question if that falls into the definition of this very tight definition of obligation vacation we've come up with in the last 30 seconds.
Maybe not.
Because you were replacing an obligation with an obligation. If it's, I think for an obligation vacation to be really a vacation, it should be replaced with reading a book, watching
right.
a TV show, getting a massage, doing
right.
something that kind of relieves the pressure of an obligation.
Well, I'm going to think if, you know, I can't think of it now, but I will spend some time pondering if there's an obligation I could take a vacation from and enjoy myself.
Yes. And obviously, going to see my mom isn't just an obligation.
Yes.
It's something that as a daughter, you know, I want to be doing.
No, all of these things are things that are in your life for a reason. And they're valuable, and that's why you care about them. But they can also, you know, be burdensome at times.
Right. And there are so many of them. This is just my example. But, like, cleaning your house might be something
oh.
you need to take an obligation
yes.
vacation from. deciding, like, not to go through the mail for a week.
Yes.
Could be something you need to take an obligation vacation from. We all have a bazillion small and large obligations in our lives. And if, like, just pick one. Take an obligation vacation from that one thing.
Yes. One way that I do sometimes take an obligation vacation is I'll say to Adam, like, I just can't deal with this right now. Can you do it? And that's a nice thing about being married.
Yeah.
Is sometimes you can just beg someone, please take this off my plate.
Yes. One way to take an obligation vacation would be to order a meal service for a week.
Yes.
Have your food delivered so you don't have to cook.
Yes.
Just for 1 week.
Yeah. There are many ways to take obligation vacations. I want to know if people out there are taking obligation vacations, or do they want to? If so, what would it be? And, you know, how would you accomplish that?
So let us know. You can email or send us a voice memo at happierinhollywood@gmail.com.
Coming up, we'll share a coffee-making Hollywood hack so great that even Oprah is on board. But first, a word from our sponsor.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/RS10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/RS10 today.
All right, Liz, now it's time for this week's Hollywood hack. It's one of my favorite things ever in the history of the world. And again, this is not an ad. It's the Asobu cold brew coffee maker.
And even Oprah uses it.
Oh, my God.
It's on her favorite things list.
Yes. I found it from Oprah's favorite things list. I ordered two of them. There might be two on my kitchen counter this very moment, because I always want to have my cold brew brewing. And Mary also got one.
Wow.
They're phenomenal.
See, I'm not a cold brew person, so this is lost on me, but I love the joy you get from it.
Oh,
and
I
also
do.
The caffeine you get from it, which helps you work.
Yes.
Which helps me. Explain what it is.
Okay. It's this just delightful, delightful machine. It's not even really a machine. Okay. It's
contraption.
There's like a thermos on the bottom, and on the top is a spot to put in the coffee grounds, and then you pour cold water over it, and then you just let it sit for as long as you want. You can let it sit for a day. You can let it sit for 2 days. And then when your cold brew is sufficiently strong for your personal taste, you just like press a button and the beautifully brewed cold brew coffee drains down into the thermos, and it comes with a lid for the thermos. So then you just unscrew it and shoop, put the lid on your thermos, and you have your coffee.
And you add ice at that point.
Yes. Yes. And it makes wonderful coffee, and it's so easy.
Now, Sarah, I have to tell our listeners that you're so into this that you bought a separate thermos, a large thermos, and you pour like multiple cold brew doses, I guess, I don't know what to call it, portions into your thermos, and then you bring it to set or wherever we're going, like in a separate bag. And then throughout the day, you get extra ice and pour yourself fresh cold brewed coffee from your thermos.
Yes, but that is not extra. That's the thermos that comes with it.
Oh, you're kidding.
If you detach it, put the lid on and take it with you.
Oh, I thought it was like a cup. It's an actual thermos.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's brilliant.
I wish I liked cold brew coffee just so I could use this contraption.
I would have sold you on it long ago, but you don't. Oh, well.
And that's it for this episode of Happier in Hollywood. Email us or send us a voice memo at happierinhollywood@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and please subscribe if you haven't already.
Thanks to our producer, the amazing Chuck Reed, and everyone at Sankola Sound. You can follow them on Instagram at Sankola Sound. And thanks to the awesome ad team at Panoply.
Thank you to our assistant, Mary Merkins, for helping keep us sane right now.
And as always, thank you to Gretchen Rubin. Happier in Hollywood is part of the Onward Project.
Get in touch. I'm on Instagram at Liz Craft, and Sarah is at S Fain. We also have a Facebook group. Search for Happier in Hollywood on Facebook to join the conversation.
Until next week, I'm Sarah Fain.
And I'm Liz Craft. Thanks for joining us. It's a fun job.
And we enjoy it.
Sarah, speaking of your free time at 7:20 in the morning, how was that Pilates class you did?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. It was so awful. It was the worst. Mary sent me to this place that...
What is it? The Mega Reformer?
Yeah, Mega Formers. It's never.
Right, so
never
you
again.
You're still searching.
I am.